In this hour of Focus 580, we will look back to certainly one of the biggest events, one of the biggest continuing news stories of the last decade, really, here in East Central Illinois, and that is the closing of Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. The closing was officially announced in December 29th of 1988, and it was something that folks in this area followed over a period of years. This morning, we have as our guest Katie Podagrossi. She's the former mayor of Rantoul, Illinois. She had been mayor for almost 5 years when that announcement was made and continued to be mayor as the folks there dealt with the repercussions of that closing. She says that in an effort to set the record straight about what happened and how people in Rantoul responded, she wrote a book. She's published it herself. Now, the title is Eye of the Storm, Chanute Closes. It is now available in bookstores here in our area. If you're interested in looking back and reading about just what happened in Rantoul over those years, you can find it. And, of course, questions are welcome. The number, if you'd like to call in here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, you match those numbers with letters on the phone, you get WILL, so it's 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Ms. Podagrossi, hello.
Thank you. Yes.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. You, I do know, and I know I've seen you quoted, in fact, almost using those very words in a newspaper story. I think that you wanted to get the record straight.
Well, not so much to set the record straight, but make sure we keep it straight.
Ah, so we actually kind of have a record, right?
Yes, and but as time goes by, different people who might not have gone through the process with us, you know. You hear things say things like that Rantoul was in a panic and things like that, and that never happened. Rantoul, we knew that we had 5 years to work on our future, and we believed in ourselves, and I don't think we ever panicked. We were certainly interested in the way that we became involved, and then the more we found out, the angrier we were in that. So there were so many actually outright lies to close the base, used to close the base. For instance, the official record said that we had a 30-bed hospital, when in fact we had a 230-bed hospital,
mm-hmm.
and that we had inadequate housing. Yet they moved the classes to bases that had no family housing, and they had to start from scratch building family housing, where we had 1,400 units of family housing, not to count the 6,000 rooms of dormitory space.
So it sounds as if you would say that if we ask this question, was this process, was it rational, was it fact-based, was it honest, was it fair, we'll put that in quotes, mm-hmm. to Chanute and Rantoul, it sounds as if your answer would be no, it wasn't.
A resounding no. I don't know how people in high places could actually use so much misinformation, and the people making the decision never came here and never sent any of their staff here. They depended on what was given to them, and what was given to them was a lie.
The process for closure of bases was designed, at least this is my understanding, it was designed so that various members of Congress could not intervene for the benefit of their constituents.
Well, not effectively anyway. They could have, individual ones could have, but without that many districts being affected, it was hard to get enough congressmen together to make any difference.
Was it, though, I guess the question in my mind was, do you think that anyone could have blocked the closure of Chanute?
No one, other than a judge, and we did go to court, and we lost. I don't think it was fair that we lost, because the judge said that if he overturned this for Chanute, that would prevent the closing of 86 bases. First of all, there never were 86 bases to be closed, because that counted realignment. Some of the places that they planned, that they announced that they were closing, were simply bases that they had planned to build that had never been built. And some were just isolated housing areas that had been abandoned years ago. There were fewer than a dozen, probably, bases that involved over 300 military people.
Mm-hmm. Something that I think is interesting, among the many interesting things that you write about in the book, is it seemed that different people reacted differently to the news, and it seemed that people who were in politics, political leaders, uh-huh. with the exception of yourself, uh-huh. said, well, what we ought to do is fight the closure. And interestingly enough, it seemed that the business people in the community seemed to be saying, well, it's done, it's over with. What we ought to do right now is starting to think about and talk about redevelopment and just say, okay, the book's closed, we need to go on.
Yes, that's the way it sifted out. There were, exceptions, of course, to that general rule. But I think that the politicians knew that you could get changes made, that laws could be changed, and you could fight City Hall. But I think that the business people felt that it was probably a losing cause, and that if we lost time in a losing cost, then we would be closer to closure before we ever started on redevelopment. But we did both at the same time, and I think that my overriding goal during all of this was to make sure that we came away with a unified community, mm-hmm. and that everybody had an opportunity to work on the closure and the redevelopment however they felt they could be most effective, and we used everybody in any way that they wanted to be used, and tried to make opportunities for them to work on saving Rantoul, not just saving the base.
Yeah, I think that it is the case that the effort to fight the base closure extended into the second year after the announcement of closure. So that effort went on for some time.
Yes, it did, and with everybody's blessings. Because each side knew that they may fail and hoped that the other would be successful for a long, long time. The diehard ones who kept fighting after a full year, I think were wishing the industrial people, well, when United Airlines came in to look at us, certainly everybody was on board in hoping that we would be successful in attracting them. So each side had days when they were up and days when they were down, and each side wished the other one well and hoped that they succeeded. We simply wanted to save Rantoul.
Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580, Katie Podagrossi, is the former mayor of Rantoul, Illinois, and she was there during the time of when folks there were dealing with the closure of the Chanute Air Force Base. That announcement was made officially right at the end of 1988, and something that played out over a period of years. She's written a book and published it herself, which is her account of how all of this went down. The title of her book is Eye of the Storm, Chanute Closes, and it is available here in area bookstores if you would like to look at it. You can also find the book at the Aerospace Museum there in Rantoul and some other places as well. And if you have questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have someone here in Urbana to join the conversation on line one.
Good morning.
Yes.
2 points. One, I just admire your speaker so very much. I'm in Urbana. I did not follow the ins and outs. I'm not privy to what a lot of other people are. But I just think that looking back at her behavior and her willingness to stay in there and use her intelligence and her energy is a wonderful model for other communities going into that experience and for the leaders of those communities. So I just want to thank you ever so much for giving the leadership that you did give.
Oh, thank you very much.
The second thing, I'm interested in, just as a model, how enthusiastic or willing to be involved businesses were, and whether small businesses or large businesses wanted to get involved in one of the two ways that you've described. Were there some leaders who in the very beginning said, we want to work at this, or did people have to be convinced that they could do something and they needed to work together? And I'm just interested in it as a model of...
No, really, it was almost like a hurricane had hit your community.
I see.
No one sat back and waited to be asked.
I see.
Everybody came forward, uh-huh. And when we had when we needed a couple of hundred people, all we had to do was to say, let the media know, and certainly our greatest... allies were members of the media, everybody from WILL to the Chicago Tribune to the New York Times to CNN, all the local and area media, especially the people in the state of Illinois. They had things to lose too. WILL would be losing many of their listeners,
right,
and some of their support, and you know, that was true of every small business. So people cooperated in every way possible.
Now, in the long run, was that also the case, or did some businesses just fold up and leave Rantoul, or just say, we can't do anything?
No, nobody folded up and left Rantoul just because of the base closure. We did, early on, we did have a burger place that closed over there by the high school. I forget the name of it. They're a nationwide chain. Somebody asked if they were closing because of Chanute Air Force Base, and they were talking to headquarters, and they had never heard of Chanute Air Force Base. But suddenly they jumped on board and said, oh, yes. You know, that was a reason. But they were closing restaurants around the country,
yes,
and we just happened to be one of them.
It was
so
a national decision.
Like that happened.
Yes.
But back in 1975, I wrote another history of the community of Rantoul, from the time that we were established. And as you go through the history of any town, there are a certain number of businesses that are going to come and go in any given year.
Of course.
Or especially in any given decade.
Of course.
And that was true in Rantoul.
Sure.
Our strongest businesses, of course, all lasted, and many of our smaller businesses lasted, but to say that they weren't affected would not be true.
I see.
Now, we had the Hitchin Post out on the edge of town, one of our very active restaurants. Well, they were almost completely dependent on the base.
Right.
You know, they were right across the street from the main gate of the base.
Of course.
And especially their lunch crowd,
yes,
and their evening crowd. I think the Navy kind of adopted that place. We have a lot of Navy here, too. And they were affected,
mm-hmm,
and they eventually closed. I can't say that Chanute Air Force Base closing was the reason for it, but
certainly their demand was,
yeah,
down. Their customers.
And then we had a store downtown, Ben Franklin, that closed.
Mm.
But then Ben Franklin, the owner and manager, died.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully believe that if that had not happened, that Ben Franklin would be there today.
Sure. Now, was Ben Franklin like I used to call a 10-cent store?
Oh, yes, and one,
yeah,
of the...
And those are pretty much out anyway.
Not really. The ones that have lasted have really grown, and they've gotten into the craft business.
Really?
We were... we attracted people here to Rantoul to the Ben Franklin all the way from up almost to Chicago.
Oh, how...
They just carried things that no other craft store carries.
Uh-huh.
They have fewer Ben Franklins now, but they're larger.
Well, you certainly are a wealth of information, and I'll get off and listen. But again, I thank you so much. It takes the a leader with real dedication to make a difference, and I'm convinced, even in my naivete, that you did make a big difference, and I just thank you very much.
Well, I hope so. They say there's nothing to cause production like a monkey on your back, and the monkey was certainly
and you were the monkey. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Other questions, comments, certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. As I mentioned here a couple times, the announcement came right at the end of 1988, and you knew that the government would be announcing some base closures. You explained in the book that you had, and the folks in the community had, been assured by Ed Madigan, who at the time represented this area in Congress, that Chanute would not be closed. But you also explained that the night before this announcement was to be made, you wrote two press releases, one for each eventuality, if it was going to be closed and if not. And that makes me wonder, did you have some inkling, or were you just thinking, well, you might as well be ready no matter what happened?
Well, there were rumors down at Air Training Command headquarters, and of course Chanute Air Force Base was an Air Training Command base, one of five. And there were very strong rumors down there that Chanute was on the list. But Congressman Madigan was still being assured by people close to the commission that Chanute was not on the list. Less than a month before the announcement was made. So on the one hand, we had to believe, you know, who would lie to a congressman? But evidently they were. And yet the rumors persisted so that we had to take it seriously.
You heard about this first on CNN.
Yes. We were almost the first base to be announced for closure. They started with the Air Force, and of course, Chanute is a C. They were going alphabetically, and we were very close to the first.
And the Air Force never sent the community a formal notice that the base was going to be closed?
No, but I never thought about that one way or the other until somebody recently asked that question, if we had ever received any formal notice. Actually, I guess we took it as formal notice when the Secretary of Defense announced it on CNN.
Here's another caller, somebody with calling on cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hello, I'm here. I'm very interested in Katie's description of the closing of Chanute. I grew up in a military town in upstate New York, Griffith Air Force Base, and we had gone through the same angst, very similar repercussions early on down the road. I mean, the military was very close-mouthed about it, but there were always rumors circulated over the years that the base would close. In many instances, I think it was probably a blessing in disguise because, like Rantoul, the city was able to pick up and attract lucrative businesses. But it took a tremendous groundswell of support, a lot of success, but a lot of heartbreak also. And one thing that comes to mind here is that there was years where we could have brought in, or at least the rumor was that private enterprise, General Motors, or something was interested. But no, we have the base, and the pay was very good. In many instances, anybody who had a job with the federal government were blessed. I'm not saying they were the hardest workers, but at the same time, I understand that now it seems like, wow, we're so glad that we've been able to revamp this.
Well, you have, Ms. Moldegrosso, you have some comment on that?
Well, I think that Rantoul, first of all, is very patriotic. And it wasn't the closure that we minded, it was the way that it was done. It's so very, very underhanded. Would most of Rantoul say that we're better off now than we were before? It's a little early for that. We still miss very much the cultural advantages of having the base here.
Yeah, I have to admit that. The cultural advantage, yes. It brought in a myriad of personalities and cultures. Right. That's hard to you can always supplement but not supplant. You're right.
We were the home base for the Air Force Band of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Of course, all of Champaign County took advantage of that. We had the best 4th of July parades ever because we had that wonderful band.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of assets.
Exactly.
That cannot be replaced.
Right.
But we have diverse jobs now, and we're not a one-industry town.
No.
So in that regard, we will never again have to dread the closure of half of 65% of our economy.
Oh, yeah, that put a big hole in upstate New York, too. I mean, a Strategic Air Command base which brought in, tons of opportunities in the military. But it was a kind of a false economy in a way. Once that was pulled out, boy, it took a while to fill in the gap. Restaurant foreclosures, enrollment figures for state aid. Yeah, it was something else. But I do have to tip my hat. It seems like you were one of the brave and conscientious and conservative and persistent individuals that I've read about who who did not give up.
Well, there's no giving up. It's like almost like you're in the middle of a river drowning. You're going to keep swimming until you get to the edge. You'd like to give up sometimes, maybe, but there's no choice.
Yeah, I appreciate the comment of the caller. And he got at something that I certainly kind of question that I wanted to raise with you, and I was thinking about it. I went back and was looking at some news stories that had appeared in our paper, the News Gazette, and here's a story from just a little more than a year ago, from early December of 99. And the headline on the story is, Rantoul officials agree that village is better today without Chanute. Do you think that Rantoul is better off without Chanute?
Well, we're different. I don't know that we're better. In some ways, we're better. In other ways, not. We have probably our income level has the median income in town has probably dropped somewhat. We had a strong economy, I think, with the base, and I think we're getting a strong economy now. But we're still in a growing mode. And would I accept the base back if they'd offered it to us? If I had a choice, I would say no, because I think that the economy that we eventually have will be stronger. And it'll be, like the caller mentioned, it's kind of a false economy. What you find is with more people shopping at Walmart than at the BX, you're getting more money into your turning over into the local town, and you're getting more of the tax money. There was no tax money paid at the commissary in the BX. And with people buying at IGA and Walmart and Rural King and places like that now, we all benefit from that much more than we did before.
We're now about at the midpoint of the show. Let me introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Katie Podogrossi. She's the former mayor of Rantoul, Illinois, and was there during the time that the community was dealing with the effects of the closing of Chanute Air Force Base. The official announcement came right at the end of 1988, and by that time she'd been mayor for almost 5 years. She has now written and published a book that is her account of how all of this was dealt with, how the folks there in Rantoul did. The title of her book is Eye of the Storm, Chanute Closes, and is in bookstores here in our area, if you would like to look at it. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Yeah, here's another caller in Chicago on our line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Rantoul, as with many cities where there were bases, military bases, was a victim of a concerted campaign by the military in part, but mainly the power brokers of the South and the West, to move as much of the as many military bases as possible into those areas, the South and the West. On the East Coast, you had the naval bases of Boston, Brooklyn, naval yards. Philadelphia closed and moved down to Virginia and Mississippi. I'm from New Jersey originally. My hometown had a Navy base that was built just before World War II, which supplied the 7th Fleet in the Southwest Pacific. And then after that was closed down, the Army took it over, and that became a base for many of the exports from the United States to Europe, to the Eastern Hemisphere, to Europe and Africa and so on, Asia. Most of your tanks that went for the Desert War were shipped out of this base. This is in Bayonne, New Jersey. And this, 5 years ago when I was back there, they were going to close this down. Fort Diggs, which was an old base, was closed down, and so on. And here in Chicago, in Illinois, you had Fort Sheridan closed down, and a number of military establishments, Joliet Arsenal, and so on, closed down. And all this stuff was moved out to the west and the south, and mainly for, well, the military wanted better weather to operate in, supposedly. That was their argument. But the power brokers, the people in Congress mainly, and your Republican administrations in large part, wanted the money and the power transferred out there, which is, it was a good source of income for them and of wealth. And this is why you were stuck in the middle, and this is why the North in general was stuck in the middle and the East.
I'm interested in your reaction to that, Ms. Bodegrezzi. I too have heard the same kinds of comments the listener made, and also sort of people in a maybe half-kidding way talk about how the brass wanted to be able to play golf year-round. And
well, I don't think it's kidding at all. They said we had inadequate recreation facilities. Well, we definitely didn't. We had a brand-new athletic forum and things like that, a new youth center. And a golf course and so forth, but it's limited here how many months a year you can play golf. And the people in power like to ski in Colorado and to play golf at Eglin in Florida. And there are many, many people who would agree with that statement and not be kidding at all.
Anything else that caller wanted to follow up with?
No, all I want to say is that this is very similar to, it was the forerunner of the campaign that was waged to get rid of a good bit of American production facilities through the NAFTA and so on for purposes. It's a campaign very similar, and the present foreign economic policy of both administrations, the GATT and so on, all our productive power is being moved overseas, and we're not being left with very much productive power now, factories and so on.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the comment. Other calls and questions are certainly welcome. If people want to pick up the phone and be a part of the conversation, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Early on in the process, when you found out that Chanute would be closed, naturally enough, for support and help, you turned to the same guy was our representative in Congress at the time, Ed Madigan, who later on went on to become Secretary of Agriculture. He at the time was involved in a battle for the position of minority leader with Newt Gingrich,
yes,
who won. Mr. Madigan apparently was pretty unhappy with you because he felt you were making trouble for him and making this battle that he was involved in more difficult.
Well, I don't know if it was just me.
Well, I mean, not just you.
I think it was partly me because he viewed me as being of the opposite party, and he could get by with some things, with that. I would say that he was pretty frustrated, and we all have our bad days, and he had a few bad days there. But I think that the climax for him came when he needed Representative or Congressman Michael's help, who at that time was the current minority leader. He needed his help to become minority leader. And when we were back here in Illinois criticizing Congressman Michael, who was very much in favor of the entire base closure package, and he couldn't understand why we were fighting it and wished that we would just, not fight it and let it go. We were criticizing him for that, and then when that was quoted in the paper in Congressman Madigan's district, Congressman Madigan thought that that might hurt his chances of getting Congressman Michael's support for that position. I don't know whether it did or not, but I think that my feeling was and is that a congressman's first concern ought to be for his constituency, and we were a main part of that constituency. And I don't know, the country would probably be different as well as the district and everything else, if Congressman Madigan, who I think lost by only two votes, if he had become the minority leader, because that later became the majority leader, and he would have had an entirely different role in Congress.
Yeah.
But you can't go back and replow those fields. It's just what's done is done. But we never had an inkling that that was the way the process was working. We weren't concerned about Congressman Michael's feelings. We were more concerned about surviving here in Rantoul.
You tell a story about having once gone to visit Mr. Madigan, bringing letters and petitions from people back home who urged him to help try to keep the base open. And you say that there in his office, right there in front of you, he took the letters and petitions and just threw them in the trash.
Actually, they were copies of letters. The original letters had gone to the other congressman, and these were copies of letters that had gone to the other congressman.
Hmm.
And he was perturbed that at the time that the actual vote was about to go on in Congress to determine whether or not he would become minority leader, we were bothering all of those other congressmen. And he says to me, "Do you know what these congressmen do when you send these letters? You know, when they get letters from my district, they come down here and plop them on my desk and say, 'Get your people off my back.'"
Yeah. And you say in the book that when you went home, you never told people about this conversation. This is the first time that you've really talked about what actually happened behind closed doors?
Publicly, of course, you talk to certain people.
Yeah.
My good friend and cohort, Frank Elliott, we discussed it at length. Bob Kidd, who was with the Chamber of Commerce, was with me. We discussed it often. But none of us could see any reason at that point to alienate him any further. We just kept trying, knowing, you know, that this was going to be a long battle and that we were going to need his help in other ways. We didn't see anything to be gained by his having a bad day.
There's another story you tell about having had a conversation with him, and I don't know if this happened at the same time or it's a different time. But
Same time.
When you were meeting with him and somebody raised the issue of another base, apparently some folks had said there was this base, Lowry Air Force Base, yeah, in Colorado, that maybe would have made a better candidate for closure. And he said, "Well, I can tell you that that base is never going to close because they have a missile silo there with live nuclear missiles set for strategic targets." And then he effects said to you, "But don't tell anybody."
Yeah.
It sounds like you were sort of stunned that he would say that to you at all.
At that time, the room was full of people who were strangers to him. Now, I was not a stranger to him, neither was Bob Kidd, but other people in the room were. And we couldn't understand how he would be, letting out a high-level secret like that, which it really, I've determined in my own mind since then, based on talking with a lot of people in that field, that was not even true in the first place.
Wow. So he would you think maybe he was just trying to come up with a reason to, yet another reason to tell you guys basically, well, you know, forget it. Certainly,
yeah,
this other place is not going to close. He was just making it up.
I can't, I don't want to get into his reasons. I don't know his reasons.
Mm.
But he certainly was feeling the pressure from a lot of different points, not the least of which was all the people in Rantoul who wanted some answers to what was happening and why was it happening. And he was groping for those answers just like the rest of us. But I don't know where that came from.
Mm.
I really don't.
He also apparently pledged $1,000 to the Save Chanute effort but never sent the check.
Oh, if we'd have gone back to him and said, "Hey, you know, you were going to give us $1,000. He probably would have, but no, he didn't.
Yeah. Well, I really don't intend to heap abuse upon Mr. Madigan, who's not around anymore to defend himself. But maybe I'll ask the question: when you think about, say, maybe individuals in Illinois' delegation in Washington, or at that level of politics, who were helpful or did what they could to try to help, is there anyone that really stands out?
Oh, absolutely. Well, not just one, but four or five. Senator Dixon was extremely helpful, and so was Senator Simon. And in the final windup, before I left office, was Senator Braun. They were all helpful. Congressman Ewing could not have been more helpful. He was quoted in the paper the other day as saying that he had a staff person in Rantoula almost half-time, and that is absolutely right. Aaron Quick of his staff was in and out of Rantoula all the time, and they did everything that they could. Of course, by the time he got in, we were more in a redevelopment mode, and he was trying to help keep that on track. And then there was Governor Thompson and Attorney General Hardigan. They were all very, very helpful.
Hmm. You, I think also there was something of a disadvantage that you faced because administrations changed and people came and went. It was an advantage to have Mr. Ewing replace Mr. Madigan, but also there was a case, and here there was an exciting possibility at one time that perhaps United Airlines was going to come and put a maintenance facility there, and it would have meant thousands of jobs. It seems that, and that didn't pan out, but it seems that one reason perhaps that it didn't is that in Springfield there was a change of administrations from Jim Thompson to Jim Edgar, and it seemed that the Thompson people were really committed to this and we were really behind this. But when the Edgar people came in, they didn't have the investment in it, and so that's maybe one reason that didn't pan out.
Well, Governor Edgar's staff for a lot of future projects in helping us in redevelopment were very effective helpers. But when the actual project of United Airlines was coming to a climax, it was a bad time to change governors. I think Governor Edgar's staff had some catching up to do as far as learning, you know, where we were in the process. And, of course, their staff changed also, where we had Mike Lane, as head of the Department of Transportation, who was pretty much heading up this project for the state of Illinois. He left office, and others came in to replace him. And it was just really bad timing all the way around, and it was too bad that the pressure didn't stay with United, because I think they may not have brought their whole facility here, but I think in the final windup, Governor Thompson could have gotten something for us from United. He was putting a lot of pressure on them to the effect that they needed the state of Illinois often, that they were an Illinois company, and probably calling in chits from past favors that they had done United. And they were really putting the pressure on them, where shortly after Governor Edgar came in, there was the possibility that there might be some expansion of McDonnell Douglas into the Belleville area over there near St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that project took precedence over United coming to Rantoul.
Well, we have a little less than 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. I guess, again, our guest is Katie Puttigrossi, former mayor of Rantoul, Illinois. She has written a book about her experiences during the closure of Chanute Air Force Base, Eye of the Storm, Chanute Closes. She's published it herself. It is here in bookstores in the area if you're interested in looking at it. And questions are welcome. 333-9455. We also have toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455.
David, can I mention one thing?
Yes.
The book is available at one bookstore in Champaign-Urbana. Can I mention the name of it?
Oh, yes, certainly.
It's Pages for All Ages.
Okay.
And they've had really good sales. And that's the only place in Champaign-Urbana that it is available. And then others, of course, in Rantoul would be all the banks and the air museum.
And the museum, right. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I got the copy that I have at Pages for All Ages. I didn't realize that was the only place here in Champaign-Urbana that you could get it. One of the things that you write in the book is that and virtually in these words, that Congress planned very carefully how to close these bases, but they never gave any serious thought to converting them to civilian use. What did the government, or did were there some things that were helpful that the government did do for you?
Well, the biggest thing that they did early on was they flew some of our community leaders around to other bases that had been closed about 20 years ago. And there had actually been no bases closed for about 20 years. And we were able to talk to the community leaders in those towns and to see, you know, what they did to help themselves survive. But the things that they did not have in place, for instance, a part of the law was that they would have to sell the properties, make money off of selling the properties, in order to move the facilities to other locations. And there, and so there was a profit motive there with the properties. But what they didn't understand is that they were handing us a big asset as that was offset by the liability. In other words, we might be inheriting buildings and roads and things like that, but we were also inheriting the operation of these things. You know, it cost. They were forgetting that it cost money to operate them,
mm-hmm.
And so money was not coming with them to help with the operations. We were doubling the size of our city and having our income, and so it would be very difficult for us to buy properties like the airport. They at first they wanted to sell us everything. They wanted to sell us the roads. They finally, you know, woke up and we acquired the airport and properties like that at no cost, but we also inherited the cost of operations.
So did then, I guess I just want to make sure I'm clearing this on my own mind, then did the government give everything to the village, or did Rantoul actually have to pay some money, actually have to buy some of the stuff, either buildings,
no,
property, whatever?
We did not buy any,
okay.
But we didn't inherit it all either. It's about half and half. About half of it was sold to private developers. All of the housing areas, the golf course, the education areas, the dormitories, things like that were sold to private developers. We acquired at no cost the airport and airport support properties. That's the hangars as well as the runways and related buildings related to the airport. We also acquired through the Department of the Interior the recreation facilities other than the golf course. We got the athletic forum, the youth center, the lake area, and you know, properties like that. The University of Illinois acquired at no cost some properties on the back of the base for a cement testing or roadway testing a program that they have. I think that that was the only other public entity that asked for property and got it at no cost. I'd say at least half of the properties were sold. And then the developers turned around and redevelop the housing and sold that to private individuals.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of other callers here. We'll try to get him in. First, Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for writing the book. I'm going to write down and get it. What are you doing these days? And I endorse that first caller's respect for what you did then. I hope you are considering maybe putting your skills and energies back to public service someday.
Well, I would love that if it wasn't for running for office, but I don't know what could convince me ever to run for office again. If I just had one handed to me, I would love it, but I don't know that I've got the will that it takes to run for office again.
Okay. Well, hope to see you again in public life somewhere.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to another Champagne person here. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was wondering whether there were any environmental problems left when the government left the base, and if so, how they were handled.
We had the same environmental problems that any, like a city, would have. We didn't have the environmental problems that you might have at a nuclear site or a place where the runways had been much more active than they were here. We did have some cleanup of the underground storage tanks, just like every gas station on every corner, you know, throughout America has had to dig up those gas tanks and things like that. We had those. We had more normal every day, you know, the landfills and those things. It was kind of like a surprise to me that the government really followed through with those things in a more responsible way than I would have given them credit for to start with. I think they were really conscientious about that and seem to be continuing to be. Many of these things, well, like we had one area, the burn area for the fire school, that was deep pollution into the ground where they had burned off that something like kerosene, a type of fuel out there in those burn areas. And that was probably the worst, and they're still working on that, but at least it's on their front burner, and it's not like a lot of cities where they've just walked off and left it undone without paying attention to it. Fortunately for us, they changed the law in midstream. In the beginning, they would not let us acquire or use any of the base properties until they had it all cleaned up. They did change that in about 1993 and began to let us use some of the properties before they got them all cleaned up.
We're going to have to stop there because we've come to the end of the time. I want to say to you, Ms. Bodegressi, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David, for having me.